Maxwell House Coffee presents Good News of 1938. Once again, the makers of Maxwell House Coffee invite you to be their Hollywood guests. So imagine yourselves on stage 30 of Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Studios, where tonight you will meet Robert Taylor, Fanny Bryce, and Hanley Stafford, Frank Morgan, Mary Martin, Douglas MacPhail, and Meredith Wilson and his orchestra. And tonight, we are to have two hosts for this hour of entertainment, Robert Taylor and Robert Young.
Thank you, Ted. Well, Robert, I see we have to divide the honor tonight. Take it, Taylor.
Okay, Bob, we'll take turns. Ladies and gentlemen, tonight you will hear another in the famous Good News series, If Men Bought Automobiles as Women Do. Take it, Young.
Take it, Taylor.
You will also hear a drama especially written for this program called By Advice of Counsel, enacted by Rita Johnson, Robert Young, and myself. Take it, Young.
Take it, Taylor.
Now, wait a minute. Why should I do all the work on this program? Take it, Young.
Take it, Taylor.
Take it, Meredith.
Take it, boys.
Ladies and gentlemen, a rousing tune called Hooray for Hollywood.
Hooray for Hollywood, that truly ballyhoo in Hollywood, where any office boy or young mechanic can be a panic with just a good-looking fan. And then the barmaid can be a starmaid if he dances with or without a fence. Hooray for Hollywood, for your terrific is your even good, where anyone at all from Shirley Temple to Amy Temple is equally understood. Go on and try your luck, you might be Donaldson. Oh, hooray for Hollywood.
Prepare yourselves for murder and mayhem. Here comes Fanny Bryce as Baby Snook. This time we find Snooks and her daddy, played by Hanley Stafford, seated in a doctor's examination room. Snooks has been complaining of a pain in her leg for 3 days, and daddy has coaxed her into this visit. They are waiting for the doctor. Let's listen.
Daddy?
Yes, Snooks?
Where's the doctor?
He's in another room looking at a patient. He'll be in here in a few minutes.
What's in that glass case?
Well, those are the doctor's instruments.
Is he going to play them?
Well, they're not musical instruments, Snooks. They're used for making examinations.
Who uses them, Daddy?
The doctor.
What for?
To find out if people are sick.
What people?
The people who come here.
Why do they come here?
Because they are sick.
Then why does he need those instruments?
To make sure.
Don't the people know?
No.
Why?
Because a lot of people only imagine they're sick when they're really not. And a lot of other people think they're very healthy, and they find out they're terribly sick. So when you feel good, you may be sick. And when you feel sick, you may be very healthy.
How do you feel, Daddy?
I feel fine.
Because you're sick?
No. I'm in perfect health, and I want you to be the same. That's why I brought you to the doctor.
Is he going to examine me?
Yes.
Where?
All over.
It don't hurt me all over.
I know it doesn't, but you've had a pain in your leg for 3 days, and it might be caused by your tonsils.
Where's them?
In your throat.
Huh?
Your leg may hurt on account of your throat.
Does your throat hurt me on account of my leg?
Of course not.
Why?
How do I know? It just doesn't, that's all. Now, don't go too close to that instrument case.
All right. What's them funny-looking ice tongues?
Oh, they're not ice tongues. That's a stethoscope.
I want it, Daddy.
Oh, what for?
I want to play Iceman.
I told you they have nothing to do with ice. The doctor's used that stethoscope on you before.
Has he?
Why, certainly. And you know what he does with it, too. He puts one end in each ear, and then what happens?
The Iceman carries him away.
No, it's like a telephone. The doctor puts those things in his ears and listens to your cardiac reaction. Oh, what's the matter?
I want to go home.
You can't go home. We're going to wait for the doctor.
I don't want
to. Oh, there's nothing to be afraid of. The doctor won't hurt you. He's known you ever since you were born.
How?
Well, they just happened to be there when you arrived.
Where?
Right here in California.
Was I born in California?
Well, yes.
Where was you born?
In Denver.
Where was Mommy born?
Mommy was born in New York.
Well, how did we all get together?
I don't know. And stop twisting those dials.
I want to turn on the radio.
Oh, that's not a radio. It's an X-ray machine.
What's it for?
It's a very expensive medical machine for making pictures.
Turn it on, Daddy.
Now, what for?
I want to see Shirley Temple.
Oh, it doesn't make moving pictures. It takes pictures of the inside of your body so the doctor can tell what's wrong.
Oh. What's inside my body, Daddy?
Oh, a lot of things. To begin with, there's a large number of bones in your body. Did you know that?
Uh-huh.
How did you know?
Because I had sardines for lunch.
Oh, I'm not talking about those bones. I mean the skeleton. Well, there's a skeleton standing right there in the corner. Well, what are you laughing at? You have one of those things inside of you. Now what are you hollering about? I have got one. Everyone has a skeleton inside of him.
Who does that one belong to?
Oh, that? Well, that skeleton belongs to the doctor.
How did he get it out?
He didn't get it out. He had it made for him in a medical supply house.
Don't he like it?
Of course he likes it.
Oh, my, don't he wear it?
Never mind that. That's just an imitation skeleton that tells the doctor what's the matter with his patient.
The skeleton tells the doctor what's the matter with his patient?
Yes.
He don't look so good himself, Daddy.
That's not what I mean at all. The doctor consults the skeleton just to make comparisons. And when he wants to find out other things about the body, he looks at this chart here with all the muscles.
Uh-huh.
The human anatomy is very intricate. Uh-huh. And you should try and learn something about it. Why, even in school, they teach you about the five senses.
Uh-huh.
The five senses. You know what the five senses are, don't you?
Uh-huh, nickels.
No. They're the sense of touch, taste, smell, sight, and hearing. And there's a separate organ for each one.
I know that, Daddy.
Well, you tell me what they are.
Huh?
Go on. You see with your visual organ. You hear with your hearing organ.
I smell with my nose organ.
Yes.
I see with my hand organ, and I eat with my mouth organ.
Oh, well, I wish that doctor would hurry.
I want to go home.
In a few minutes, Snooks. I want to wait for the doctor. Now, just sit still and... Snooks, I told you not to touch that X-ray machine.
All right, Daddy. What's this little handle for?
Snooks!
See? Look at the pretty lights, Dad.
Good heavens, turn that thing off! Turn it off!
You still want to wait for the doctor, Daddy?
Oh. Yes, you. You. We are going to wait for the doctor. And you're going to tell him exactly what happened. Here he comes now.
What was that? Good heavens, what happened to my X-ray?
Doctor, my little girl here will tell you the truth. Go ahead, Snooks.
Huh?
Well, who broke this $5,000 machine?
Tell him exactly what happened, Snooks.
All right. My daddy was trying to take a picture of Shirley Temple.
What?
And the skeleton jumped on his back.
Oh!
So Daddy got mad and kicked the machine to pieces.
Ah!
I'm going out and get a policeman.
Get a doctor, too.
What for?
My daddy fainted.
That was marvelous, man. That was marvelous. And now, ladies and gentlemen...
Take it, Young. Delighted, Bob. Last week, you had the fun of presenting Mary Martin to our Maxwell House audience for the first time. Now it's my turn. Mary, I'd just like to say that I thought you were every bit as good as Bob said you were last week. And all my friends agree with me.
Thank you, Mr. Young.
Now, Mary, save that mister for the other master ceremony. Won't you just call me something more intimate?
All right. How about Uncle Bob?
Take it, Young.
All right, you can call me anything. Ladies and gentlemen, Mary Martin sings Serenade in the Night. Nice vocalizing, Mary. And now a word from Ted Pearson.
Thank you, Bob. Tonight, friends, I want you to hear from a woman who not only believes in the Golden Rule, she practices it. Mrs. Ann Usland of 40 Clarkwood Street, Mattapan, Massachusetts. Here's what she writes.
Recently, I had a very interesting experience I thought you might like to hear about. I have a gift shop where I spend most of my time and where I have my lunch every day. I make your coffee in a percolator there on a little electric stove in the back room. And there's nothing in the world that smells so good as that coffee when it begins to perk. Well, just a few days ago, a woman was in the store, and she smelled the coffee and asked me what it was. She said it was the most fragrant coffee she'd ever smelled. I told her it was Maxwell House, and she said she'd never used it, but was going right out and buy a can. She came in again the very next day just to tell me what she and her husband thought of Maxwell House coffee. She said she was never going to use anything else, and she thanked me over and over again for recommending it to her. Well, I'm in business myself, and I'm passing this on to you, as I would like to have a thing of this sort passed on to me.
Well, thank you, Mrs. Eflin, for your thoughtfulness. We do appreciate it. And friends, I'm sure many of you also were first introduced to this superb blend through the delicious aroma of Maxwell House in the making. Surely a real foretaste of that rare, mellow flavor of Maxwell House in the cup. You'll find that men in particular relish the flavor and full-bodied goodness of Maxwell House coffee. They call it a great cup of coffee. So a word to our lady friends. Get a pound of Maxwell House coffee tomorrow. Treat your husband and yourself to the friendly stimulation, the great coffee pleasure, the deeper satisfaction that's always in a fragrant cup of Maxwell House.
The next time you see an MGM picture like, say, The Toy Wife, with Louise Reiner, Melvin Douglas, and Robert Young, that's me.
Or Three Comrades with Margaret Sullivan, Francho Tone, Robert Young, and Robert Taylor, that's me. You will probably be unaware that the musical background is contributing more than its share towards making you laugh or cry.
This musical background is known as a score.
Right, and it is carefully planned and worked out to fit every scene and mood of the picture.
The man responsible for the music in our MGM pictures is with us tonight. He is a great musical director, a renowned composer, and a superb arranger whose musicianship is second only to his extreme modesty. Must be Morgan fooling around back there. I'm glad to introduce this fine artist to you now, my friend, ladies and gentlemen.
It's Morgan again.
You take it, Young.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you very much. That is probably the finest thumbnail description of the real Morgan you've ever given me.
Frank, that introduction wasn't for you.
It wasn't for... Well, who else could you be referring to than that old master of harmony, counterpoint, and arranging, Frank Morgan, S.I.G.?
S.I.G.?
Yeah, swing it gate, old solid tutti.
Now,
yes,
wait a minute.
Yes, man, the stuff is here to
wait a minute.
I'm a solid sender.
Wait a minute.
I've got one.
I'm trying to introduce the man who arranges and directs the musical scores for our pictures.
Oh, well, that's quite unnecessary, Bob. I think these people all know me. All right.
Frank, if you do all the musical directing and scoring of these pictures, why does it always say on the screen, music under direction of Nat Finston?
Oh, yes. Well, that's my nom de noti. I can't let people know I do all the work around the studio. Did you notice how clean your dressing room was this morning? Well, I'm the janitor, too.
All right, genius. Just wait a second. Oh, Nat.
Yes, Bob?
I want you to meet the man who's in charge of all the music for MGM Pictures. Frank Morgan, Nat Finston.
Well, I'm glad to know you, Mr. Morgan. I mean, what? Who'd you say this man is?
Listen, you faker, this is the real Nat Finston, head of our music department.
Oh, yes. Well, I'll see you later, Bob. I've got a lot of things to do. I've got to send my car to be pressed and drive my suit home. I've got so
long. Oh, no, you don't. No, you don't. You stay right here. Nat, Frank here has been trying to tell us he directs music under the name of Nat Finston.
Well, you must be suffering from a touch of the sun, my impudent young iconoclast. Well, there you are. They write it. I merely said that Mr. Finston's orchestras are as fine as any ever directed by Frank Morgan.
Listen here, you unmitigated prevaricator.
Now, Bob, watch your language. That's no way to talk to Mr. Finston.
Who's talking to Mr. Finston?
I am. Mr. Finston, I hope you'll forgive our quick-tongued young clothes horse here. It's only another musical director like myself who can appreciate the artistry behind the score.
I wasn't aware that you were a conductor, Morgan.
Well, of course. 5 years with the Municipal Streetcar Company. You mean orchestra conductor.
Yes, maestro. That's what he means.
Let's see. Frank Morgan, orchestra conductor?
That
name doesn't seem to have a familiar ring.
Well, small wonder, my dear Finston, but you see, the name is Frankovich Morgansky. Does that mean anything to you?
No, absolutely nothing.
Yeah, I thought so. Well, you've never heard of Frankovich Morgansky, idol of every music lover on the continent, the toast of Russia?
They should have scraped you.
Mr. Young, I'll trouble you to remember that you are addressing the former orchestra leader to His Imperial Majesty Nikolai, Tsar of all the Russias and musical advisor extraordinaire to the Imperial Ballet at Moscow.
Uh-oh, we're off key again, Steve.
Why, when I would saunter along the streets of music-loving Petrograd, the peasants would bow their heads in reverence, Even the bourgeois will want to whisper, there he goes, nov schmaz kapop.
It must be very gratifying for a musician to receive such acclaim, Mr. Morgan.
Mr. Finson, it would have done your musical heart good had you been there that day in Minsk by the sea. With my band of roving balalaika strummers, we were playing a command performance at the famous Caviar Festival for Her Royal Highness the Princess Catherine Dmitrioff Zabisco. Oh, what a thrill. As we swung into the last eight bars of that tender Russian lullaby by Mir Bistu Shernovich. As one man, 10,000 Cossacks hooted and huzzahed. Did I say hooted? It was a glorious triumph. Even the Tsar's children, the little Tsardines, waved their tiny red...
Awe-inspiring, Mr. Morgansky.
Yes, just call me Frankovich, comrade.
Listen, Frankovich, why don't you stop all this foolishness? You don't know anything about music.
That, my friend, is naught but the babbling of a person in the midst of an imbroglio. That just means a dope to you. Why, I know more about music in 1 minute than Meredith Wilson knows in 24 bars of Tacit. And that's only one man's opinion.
All right, Tchaikovsky, I don't want to argue with you now. Just be quiet a minute. I want to talk to a man who really knows something about music.
Well, I'll be glad to tell you anything.
Quiet. Oh. Nat, I understand that in Norma Shearer's new picture, Marie Antoinette, used a lot of very old and rare instruments to obtain special effects.
Yes, among them we used a harpsichord, a viola d'amore, and a clavicembalo. A clavicembalo, a sort of combination cello and guitar.
Yes, that reminds me of a very rare instrument my grandfather invented. The confuticum.
Confuticum? I don't believe I ever heard of that one.
Yes, it's also a combination instrument, sort of a cross between a tuba, a kettle drum, and a lemon squeezer. A very difficult instrument to master. Practically impossible for a human being to play.
Ah, but you can play it.
Oh, Bob, now, of course, I don't make it silly.
Tell me more about the confuticum, Mr. Morgan. It interests me. What is it like?
Well, it's got one of those, there's around, it's beautifully curved, like a Cupid's bow. When you play it, you hold your lips like this. Oh, it's lovely. Like the sighing of a breeze in the full moon.
Frank, do you expect anybody to believe all those crazy things?
Bob, you're just prejudiced, and I wish you wouldn't interrupt me. Well, where was I?
You were saying about a beautifully curved lips sighing the moon.
Lips sighing the moon. Yes, that's right. I took her in my arms and kissed her. Oh, well, so long, boys. I'll see you later. I've got a date with a lady violin player, and I don't want to be late for rehearsal.
You know, Nat Finson, someday the man in charge of the electric chair at the penitentiary is going to be a guest here. And if Morgan starts telling about how he gave up his seat to a lady, that'll be the last straw. Well, thank you, Nat, for dropping in on us.
It was a pleasure, Bob. So long.
Now our friend Doug McPhail sings, Here Comes the Sun.
With the buttercup, come on, get up, get up. Here comes the sun. Open your sleepy eyes, look at the flaming skies. Here comes the sun. Turn your back on the night. Morning, cheerful and bright. Not a shadow in your way. This day is your day. Wake with the singing birds, shout out those lucky words. Here comes the sun. Lovers are hand in hand, this is the promised land. Daydreams are fun. Laugh, your sorrow is over, and half the battle is won. Life's no gloomy race, light your happy face. Here comes the sun. And a new day is born. The world is singing the song of the dawn. Birds are waking, hear them welcome the morn. They're sweetly singing the song of the dawn. Yesterday the skies were gray, look, this morning they're blue. The smiling sun tells everyone, come and start life anew. Sing hallelujah, for the dark night is gone. Wake with the buttercup, come on, get up. Daylight is dawning, come on and get up. Life, no gloomy ray, find your happy face.
It's always pretty encouraging, isn't it, when a great business institution not only expresses its confidence in the business future of America, but backs up that confidence with a large dollar investment. So I'm going to ask Ted Pearson to tell you about our latest good news. Okay, Ted.
Well, last Monday, in the presence of Governor A. Harry Moore and other officials of New Jersey, Clarence Francis, president of General Foods, broke ground for what is to be the world's largest coffee plant. This plant is for Maxwell House Coffee. This vast project is one of several such undertakings in a large General Foods building program. The building of this new plant, which is to cover 10 acres of ground, will provide 3 million man-hours of labor. Here, as in its other great coffee plants, Maxwell House Coffee will be blended, roasted, and packed to the same high standards for which the name Maxwell House has stood for over half a century, and under the most ideal working conditions for all Maxwell House employees. In the words of Mr. Francis himself, "We are dedicating this great new plant to all you millions of friends who have made it possible by your loyalty to Maxwell House Coffee. We are deeply grateful to you, and we pledge you that we shall strive to deserve your continuing loyalty and support."
Well, Ted, I guess we'll all agree that is good news. And for it, we owe thanks largely to the loyal friends of this program.
Indeed we do, Bob. So let's toast all our Maxwell House friends right now in a steaming, fragrant cup of this coffee that's good to the last drop. Let's go, Meredith. You pour the music, we'll pour the coffee. Our program will continue in just a moment with a drama starring Robert Taylor, a song from Fanny Bryce, and more of Frank Morgan and Meredith Wilson. We pause now briefly for station identification.
You're listening to KFI Los Angeles.
This is Bob Young again, and we continue with another presentation of the MGM Theater of the Air, starring my colleague, Mr. Taylor, and Miss Rita Johnson. I'll be in there for Garrison Finish. The play was written especially for this program by Blanche Firth Ullman and is called By Advice of Consul.
After two turbulent years of married life, the Brewsters, Tom and Marjorie, played by Bob Taylor and...
The Jordans, I remember, were sitting here and here.
I beg your pardon. They sat there and there.
Not that it makes a particle of difference, but just to keep the record straight, I happen to know that you're dead wrong. They sat here and here. The lamplight was shining directly on Alice's hair.
How romantic of you to notice. Probably that's how you revoked on me, to lose 1,100 points.
Revoke on you? That's a hot
one. Well, you did.
Where were you while all this was going on? What's a dummy for, anyway? You aren't usually so backward about expressing yourself.
You would have an alibi.
Yeah, you darn tootin', I haven't a good one. It's more than you can claim for that brilliant coupe of yours in the last rubber.
What was the matter with it?
Next time I give you a strength discard, I'll try to arrange for a salute of 21 guns to call your attention to it. Coming back diamonds when I signal for club.
You didn't drop the tenor club.
I did.
You didn't.
I most certainly and emphatically did. Ask Alice Jordan. She thought...
Oh, Alice Jordan.
Yes,
Alice. That's quoting an impressive authority. She wouldn't recognize a strength discard if it jumped up and popped her in the eye.
Oh, is that so? I consider Alice a very good player.
If I didn't know any more about contract bridges than you and Alice Jordan put together, I'd go in for tiddlywinks.
Well, at least Alice knows how to treat a husband like a human being, and that's more than I can say for some other people.
It's two together, yeah.
You know, it's a funny thing about you. You know how to be charming enough to other men.
I'll bet other men don't sleep in their backs with their mouths wide open making funny noises, and it's two.
Put that doily down, will you, and listen to me. I never knew you to be so industrious.
Oh, there are one or two little mysteries about my personality that you fail to fathom.
Yeah, well, all I can say, it's a pity this domestic rash didn't break out sooner. You might have put in a little time sewing on a few buttons and darning my socks.
I'm not aware that your hosiery was neglected.
No, thanks to the laundry for sewing them up with cat guts. No wonder I got bunions.
I wish you wouldn't be so coarse. It's too, too, too.
Listen, hand over that knitting before I grab it away from you. And that paper, I'll
Tom,
teach you manners.
Tom,
give me that paper. Give me that knitting.
Give me hands. Don't you dare look at it.
Oh, won't I just.
Tom.
There's something phony here, and I'm going to get to
Tom,
the bottom of it.
Don't you look at it, and I don't want
Stop
it.
Stop clawing, you little
cat. I don't want you to look at it.
Oh, you don't, huh? Well, just the same, we'll have a look.
Two shirts, two pairs of booties, two dozen... for baby. Marge. Marge, honey, come here. I can't believe it. Oh, Marge, darling, you weren't going through it all by yourself, were you, crazy kid? Why didn't you tell me?
I thought you didn't care anymore. For a time, I've been so wretched.
Oh, me too, honey. I was never so miserable in all my life.
I've been dreadful.
Yeah, I've been a skunk. I know it.
But I'll make it all up to you, Tom. I'll make it all up to you. I'll make it all up to you. Can you ever forgive me?
Forgive you? When I think of you sitting here night after night, all alone, working your poor little fingers to the bone, I ought to come calling to you on my hands and knees over broken glass.
Oh, Tom. We'll never quarrel anymore, will we?
Never, darling, never.
Tommy. Oh, who is it?
Oh, Minnie, it's you. Yes, Miss Brewster. Oh, excuse me, I didn't know y'all had company. Why, it's Mr. Brewster. I never knew you was back.
Yes, Minnie, here I am and here to stay. How's Frank?
Oh, just fine, Mr. Brewster. I sure am glad to see you. My lonesome around you all this time with you off on a long trip and Miss Brewster crying her eyes out night and day.
Never mind about that, Minnie.
Can I go now, Miss Brewster?
Yes.
Thank you, Miss Brewster. Please, ma'am, I'll take my knitting along if you all through borrowing it.
What's that, Minnie? Is this your knitting?
Tom, please.
Minnie, answer me. Is this or isn't it yours?
Yes, Mr. Brewster, it's mine. I hope I ain't stirred up
Minnie,
no trouble.
Minnie, let go.
Just a minute, Minnie. What about the shopping list for the baby here on this paper? Is this yours, too?
Yes, it's mine. We're looking for a little one come fall.
Well, that's fine, Minnie. My congratulations. Good night.
Yes, thank you. Mr. Brewster.
Yes?
Does you all want to borrow that list? You can have it.
Good night. Well, of all the two-faced, unprincipled, double-crossing little kooks.
Oh. Tom. Don't look at me like that.
Me, goofy enough to fall for it.
Oh, Tom, dear, listen. I didn't think you'd take it like this. I only wanted to get you back.
Funny way you went about it.
I couldn't think of any other way. It always works in the movies.
Well, this happens to be life, and it won't work with me. What did I do with my hat?
Tom, come back. You're not gone.
Yeah, you're darn tootin' I am, and this time I'm going to stay gone. Oh, hello. Well... It isn't my old pal, Bill Morrison.
Hi, Tom. Hello, Marge.
Hello.
I just thought I'd drop in for a few minutes.
Oh, yeah?
What is this?
Just happened to be passing by, huh? Hey, have you
two... Now, what's going on here? Are you screwy or am I? I just dropped in to see if I couldn't patch up this thing for you idiots.
And by a strange coincidence, here's the lady, all dressed up and reeking of scent.
Oh, be your
Tom, age. I wasn't expecting Bill or anybody. It was all a bluff. It was just for you. Just as soon as you phoned, you were coming for that report for Bill.
Report for me? What report?
The report of our last quarrel, the blow-by-blow.
What?
Tom Brewster. Tom, I don't believe Bill knows a thing about it. You lied to me. You talking about cheap, low-down tricks.
Now, Marge,
you.
Wait a minute. I only did it as an excuse to see you.
You hypocrite, let go of
no,
me.
But now...
Somebody please tell me what this is all
Marge,
about.
Look, you got to listen. I thought if we went over things again, we'd see what a couple of saps we've been, Marge.
Oh. But, Tom, you did want to see me. You did want to come back.
Of course I did, honey. I can't live without you.
Oh, tell me,
boy. Darling.
Will somebody please tell me what this is all about? Will somebody please tell... Oh, skip it. While we thespians rest up for a minute, Meredith Wilson and his boys will regale you with the number one tune of the USA as of June 9th, 1938. Benny Goodman's new swing hit, Don't Be That Way. Go ahead and regale, Meredith. Thank you.
A very nifty piece of swinging, Meredith. Very nifty. What do you think, Bob?
What do I think? I got it.
What do you mean, you got it?
For 3 weeks, I've been wondering what to call that shaggy, long-haired sheepdog of mine. I think I'll call him Meredith.
What's this? Listen, young, what's the idea of calling your dog Meredith?
Now, Meredith, don't get excited. The dog had to have a name, and I just called him the first thing he reminded me of.
Well, that's different. As long as you did it for sentimental reasons.
You know, that's a funny thing. I named my dog Meredith, too.
You did? What kind of a dog is it?
A Mexican hairless.
Oh, a couple of wise guys, huh? Making fun of me by calling your dog Meredith. Well, you know that pet baboon of mine? I wish I could name it Bob, and I'd get even with both of you at once.
Okay with me, Meredith.
I don't care. Go ahead and name your baboon Bob.
I would. Only, you see, yesterday he became a mother.
Oh, a mother, eh? Well, what did you call the little darling before he surprised you?
We called it Meredith. It's my wife's idea.
Oh, your wife's idea, huh?
Well, the babies are very cute.
Yeah, I can imagine.
All except one. Ugliest thing I ever saw. Absolutely no expression, big bags under the eyes, and an enormous red nose.
Now, wait a minute, Meredith. If you've got anything to say about me, you can say it to my face. Hello, Frank. Oh, don't try to soft soap me with that hello. I know I haven't been looking very well lately.
Meredith wasn't talking about you. His baboon just had a baby.
Really? Meredith, have a cigar.
Oh, another wise guy. Listen, I'm fond of my baboon. I feel the same toward it as these fellows do toward their dog.
Oh, you boys have dogs, eh?
I've got two. That police dog of mine is the greatest dog in the country. Hurdle fence is 6 feet high. Fights like a Trojan.
Is he a good watchdog?
Recognizes any crook instantly. Sort of a sixth sense. The minute he sees a thug, he attacks him. I hate to let him go.
Why are you letting him go, Bob?
He bit me yesterday.
What is this whole hum business, Frank? Aren't you interested in dogs?
Not anymore, fellas. I was once the owner of the world's greatest dog. Champion Count von Stockwitz von Gleason auf der Heide Gansgut III.
What breed was he, Frank?
A mutt. But the greatest animal intelligence I've ever encountered. Thousands of words have been written about the brains, the devotion, the courage of the Count.
Where is he now, Frank?
He won the Carnegie Medal and retired on a government pension.
No. Wait a minute. How did your dog win the Carnegie Medal?
Well, fellas, I was once entertaining a glamorous throng of international celebrities in my townhouse in New York.
Your townhouse?
Yes, East 73rd Street. It cost me a cool $3 million, but a tasty little place in a rococo sort of a way. The guests had retired for the evening, but I was sitting in the library browsing over a bottle of Schopenhauer. When suddenly my nostrils were assailed by the pungent odor of smoke.
The house was on fire.
That's exactly right. Within 3 minutes, the place was an inferno. Showing rare presence of mind, I grabbed the unfinished bottle of Schopenhauer, and dove headfirst out of the window.
Some dive.
It was a private house, quiet car game. The police... Oh, you mean the dive out the window. Well, I landed safely, and of course my first concern was for my guest.
Oh, your first concern was for your guest. Well, what about the bottle of Schopenhauer?
Well, I killed it on the way down. When I reached the street, I turned and saw my mansion, the mass of flames. Fortunately, most of my guests had already escaped unscathed, but an investigation revealed that the ambassador from Galbornia was trapped in the south wing.
Well, where was the dog all this time?
The Count. Yes, he was checking the guest list. And as soon as he realized the situation, the intrepid little fellow dashed into the burning building and emerged in a trice with the ambassador balanced on his back. But he didn't stop there. He shot back into the inferno and returned in 10 seconds with Lady Lockington's pearls between his teeth. He tossed them to her with a bow and once more shot back into the doomed house. We waited breathless to see what he was after.
What was it, Frank?
Would you believe it? The dog dashed through my art gallery peering at the masterpieces.
Oh, I suppose you're going to tell us he came out with a Mona Lisa in his mouth.
The Mona Lisa in my collection happened to be a copy. The dog ignored it and came out with a $50,000 Rembrandt original.
That was a good day's work for any dog, Frank.
Not for the Count. I was patting the little fellow in gratitude when the fire marshal shouted, "Everybody back! The walls are going!" I looked up at the house, and in that instant, the Count broke from my grasp and dashed back into the Holocaust. Somebody... It looked like suicide. We could hear the walls cracking even over the roar of the flames. Suddenly, the back wall went out. The side walls were tottering. when through the smoke and the curtain of fire came staggering Count von Staglitz von Gleason auf der Heide Gansblut III. What do you think he had between his teeth?
What?
My fire insurance policy wrapped in a damp towel.
That's wonderful, Frank. But, say, fellas, you know, I've got a kitten.
Oh, yeah? Well, what did your kitten do?
Well, nothing. She plays with a string. The cutest thing you ever saw. Why, she's the cutest kitten in Hollywood.
That's a likely story. Would you fellas excuse me? I can't stand exaggeration.
Two weeks ago, Fanny Bryce sang on this program a song she made famous on Broadway, the immortal Rose of Washington Square. Since that night, we've been swamped with petitions for another of Fanny's Rose songs. And she's going to do it for us now. Fanny Bryce sings Secondhand Rose.
Father has a business, strictly secondhand. Everything from toothpicks to a baby grand, stuff in our apartment came from Father's store. Even things I'm wearing someone wore before. It's no wonder that I feel abused. I never get a thing that ain't been used. I'm wearing second-hand hats, second-hand clothes. That's why they call me second-hand Rose. Even my pajamas, when I don them, have somebody else's initials and them. Secondhand rings, I'm sick of secondhand things. I never get a single thing that's new. Once while strolling down the street, a woman got my gold. She nudged her friends and said, oh, look, there goes my leftiest coat. Everyone knows that I'm just second-hand Rose from Second Avenue. Even J.K. Cohen, he's the man I adore, had the nerve to tell me he's been married before. Everyone knows that I'm just second-hand Rose from Second Avenue.
Thank you very much. That was wonderful. Now, you seem to like them so well, so tonight we bring you another in our series of satires, this one titled, If Men Bought Automobiles as Women Do. Bob Young has just come into the showrooms of Hanley Stafford's used car agency to help Frank Morgan take out a new car.
Oh, Morgan! Morgan!
Yes.
Come over here quick. Quick.
Yeah?
Just feast your eyes on this little car. Isn't it adorable?
I don't know. That color doesn't hit me quite right.
What? What color were you planning on?
Blue.
Blue?
Yes, to go with that new herringbone suit of mine. I brought along a piece of the material to match it up.
Oh, good afternoon, gentlemen. My name is Stafford.
Yes.
Can I show you something in a nice car? We have some darling models. Now, what did you have in mind?
Well, what have you got?
Oh, all kinds. Sedans, roadsters, coupes.
Well, which is the best?
Well, that depends on how big a car you want.
Well, I don't know exactly, but I'll have the garage measured and you can send me up something that fits.
Oh, he doesn't mean that, Morgan. He wants to know how much money you can spend.
Oh, well, money's no object.
Oh, fine. Well, here's one of our best buys. The man who owned that car only drove it 1,000 miles and turned it back when he won another car playing Screeno. Now, I can give you a lovely deal on that, Joe.
How many miles does it give to a gallon of gasoline?
Well, that all depends on where you drive.
I knew there was a catch to it. Sure, something else.
What about that car over there with the foxtail on the radiator cap? That's for good luck, I know that.
That's no foxtail. That's Meredith Wilson's hair. He's inspecting the license plate.
Don't tell me Tightwad Wilson's going to get a new car. I'll bet he heard you're going to get one. He's doing it just for spite. The copycat.
Hello, you two. Come over here and just look at the motor in this car.
Yeah, a lot he knows about motors. He couldn't even tell which end of the bumper greases the axle.
Well, we might as well go over, or he'll come over here.
Well, what are you boys doing here?
Well, I just thought I'd drop in and buy a new car. What are you doing here?
Same thing. Of course, I really don't need a new one, you know, but I dropped by to use the phone, and I couldn't leave without buying something.
What do you mean you don't need a new car? That upholstered wheelbarrow you're driving around this stuff?
Oh, yeah? Well, there's nothing wrong with it. Now, I've had that car 4 years and never had a wreck.
You mean you've had that wreck 4 years and never had a car?
Now, here, you two. Don't be catty.
Find anything you like, Mr. Morgan?
This model is rather cute, I think. I've...
You have good taste, Mr. Morgan. Your friend, Mr. Wilson here, seems to think the same thing.
Well, that's no criterion. He doesn't know.
Mr. Stafford, what are those things?
Oh, spark plugs.
Haven't you any blue ones? We're trying to match this sample.
Well, you see,
Say, that fan is nice. It'd come in handy in warm weather. Why do they hide it there in back of the radiator? Shouldn't it be in the car?
In the car. If the fan is in the car, who's going to keep the flies off the motor? A lot you know.
Oh, where did you learn so much about motors, Wilson?
My sister was a mechanic.
Well, I assure you, gentlemen, it's really a dandy little job. Right up to the minute. Even to the new type muffler.
Muffler? What's that for?
Oh, Morgan, how can you be so stupid? The muffler's to put around the motor when it's cold.
Well, I suppose that... Everybody can't have a mechanical mind. How should I?
I do hope you're a good driver, Mr. Morgan.
Yes?
Most of our drivers nowadays aren't careful enough. Do you know that right here in this town, a man is knocked down by an automobile every 10 minutes?
Well, the poor fellow must be made of cast iron.
Well, Morgan, can I get in the back seat?
Well, of course. How does it look from the back there?
Hey, this is delightful.
Yeah?
Mr. Stafford, what a lovely buffalo robe. Does it go with the car?
Mm-hmm. Certainly does.
Oh, I'll pull it around me. Nice and warm.
Turn it around the other way with the fur towards you.
With the fur towards me? Why?
Well, it's warmer that way.
It's too bad the buffalo didn't know that. Mr. Stafford, what's this supposed to be?
Why, that's the rear view mirror.
Well, it isn't big enough. I can hardly see my face in it, let alone my hat.
Well, we'll have that fixed for you, Mr. Morgan. As Stafford service.
Fixed for him? Mr. Stafford, I've got dibs on this car. I saw it first.
Oh, no, you didn't. I did.
Why, I was in here looking at it yesterday.
I'll take this car, Mr. Stafford.
Oh, no, you don't. You sold me this car, Mr. Stafford.
Now, please, gentlemen, this isn't the only car in the world. I have another one over here, just as good and maybe even a little better bargain.
A better bargain? Well, of course, if Mr. Morgan wants this car so badly...
Remember, Wilson, you looked at it yesterday. I'll look at the other car. This one's the wrong color, anyway.
No, it's better for you, Morgan. I was really looking for something...
Now, we'll get this all settled in a minute, gentlemen. Mr. Morgan, how much did you plan on spending for a car?
Spending? Oh, well, I don't know. I hadn't given a thought.
Me either.
How much is this one?
$1,500.
What?
Oh, it's a great price. It's worth $2,000.
Well, I tell you, that's just a little above my budget.
Oh, well, we can always come down a bit. What is your budget?
Well, it's around in the circumference of $175.
$175, eh? I know just the place for you two to go.
Oh, that's lovely of you, Mr. Stafford.
Where?
The bicycle shop next door.
Stafford, this is the last time I'll ever buy a car from you.
And that goes for me, too. Let's get out of here.
Yes, come on.
Well, friends, June time is bride time. So tonight I'm going to suggest that we all look in on a typical Mr. and Mrs. Newlywed. Mr. Newlywed is helping with the dinner dishes.
Why, darling, you only half finished your coffee.
Guess I just didn't want it to.
Before we were married, you used to love coffee so. But I've noticed that you've left your cup half full 3 nights now. And at breakfast...
Say, if we're going to make the early movie, we'd better step on it.
If your husband has been leaving his coffee cup half full lately... If he changed the subject like this when you spoke to him about the coffee, why don't you start serving Maxwell House? You see, for most men, coffee makes the meal. And again, for most men, the coffee that makes the meal is Maxwell House. Men like the extra smooth, mellow flavor and full body of this matchless blend of the world's choice coffee. Yes, you'll both like its deeply satisfying, roaster-rich flavor. And you'll find it easier to make a better cup of coffee, too, no matter how you make it. The reason is we offer you Maxwell House in a choice of two grinds. The special drip grind Maxwell House for all drip and glass coffee makers, and the regular grind for percolator or boiled coffee. Get a can of Maxwell House coffee tomorrow in the one-pound size, or if you use lots of coffee, the two-pound size is a thrifty buy. Both are super vacuum-packed to bring you Maxwell House coffee, roaster fresh.
Although great masterpieces are inevitably the result of arduous labor and study, there are a few immortal melodies that are sheer genius, quick flashes of heaven-sent inspirations that come and are captured in less time than it takes to tell about it. Such a bit of melodic immortality is our concert hall selection for tonight, Mendelssohn on Wings of Song.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have a surprise for Bob Taylor tonight, and we'll tell you about it in just a moment. But first, I'd like to tell you about next week's program. As our special guest stars, you'll hear Freddie Bartholomew and Mickey Rooney in scenes from MGM's latest screen masterpiece, Lord Jeff. A musical feature will be the world premiere of a spectacular composition called Hollywood, composed by Walter Samuels, with narration by the famous columnist Ed Sullivan of the Chicago Tribune News Syndicate. In addition, all your regular favorites will be on hand. Robert Taylor, Fanny Bryce, and Hanley Stafford, Frank Morgan, Douglas McPhail, Mary Martin, and Meredith Wilson. Remember, your ticket of admission is just your loyalty to Maxwell House Coffee. And don't miss good news next Thursday. In the meantime, go to the movies and take the family with you. By the way, have you seen Three Comrades yet? I think you'll like it. And now, if Bob Taylor will step to the microphone for a moment, I have a surprise for him. But first of all, let me introduce Leo Townsend, of Radio Stars Magazine.
For some time, Radio Stars Magazine, like millions of other listeners, has been enjoying the Good News program. Its popularity has grown so that now it is definitely one of the top variety shows on the air. And so it is my pleasure to present this bronze plaque to Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer and Maxwell House, and to you, Robert Taylor, our award for distinguished service to radio.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Townsend, and I'd like to thank Radio Stars Magazine, not only for myself, but for Bob Young, Meredith Wilson, Fanny Bryce, Frank Morgan.
Yeah, just a minute, son. If there's any thanking to be done, Morgan can speak for himself. What is it?
Why, this bronze plaque, Mr. Morgan.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Do I get permanent possession now, or do I have to win it 3 years running?
Now, listen, Morgan. Don't you think the other members of the Good News cast ought to get a little pleasure out of this award from Radio Stars?
By all means, Bob. I intend to hang it in my trophy room with my other cups and medals, and I'd be absolutely delighted at any time if you'd care to run over and look at it. By appointment, of course.
Frank, do you think you won this plaque all by yourself?
In spite of my support.
Well, that's very interesting, Mr. Morgan. I wonder if you could say a few words we could print in the magazine about the award.
Well, certainly, my boy. You may quote me as saying that Frank Morgan on the Good News program is like a priceless ruby in a setting of lead.
Frank, this is an outrage.
This is the last straw.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
KFI Los Angeles, Earl C. Anthony Incorporated.